The Bellwitch legend is rooted in one specific place, Adams, a small settlement along the Red River in Robertson County. In the early 19th century, this region lay deep within the Tennessee frontier, isolated, thick with forest. Neighbors were few and far, and roads were rough, and the nights were long. So pull up a chair and get comfortable here in the Ominous Archives. I'm your host, Nick.
No, ma'am.
That was Archie, if you can hear him. Sometimes you can't. Yeah, so this weekend we're covering the Bellwitch.
We are.
Excited.
I'm very excited.
This is going to be, I guess, I wouldn't say lengthy, but it's going to be longer than our normal.
Yeah, but it's a good long. There's a lot to cover. Yeah. We've got a lot to give you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's dive right in. According to the legend, life for the Bell family was ordinary until a series of strange encounters began near their land. One day, John Bell reportedly came across this animal-like figure that didn't behave like a dog or wildlife that he recognized. So he decided to lift his rifle and fire. The creature vanishes, and not long after, another family member, Drew Bell, spotted what he thought was an unusual large wild turkey perched on a fence. So as he moved closer to take a shot, this bird spread its wings and flew off, revealing itself to be something far larger and unfamiliar. Soon after, one of the Bell children claimed to see a young girl dressed in green, swinging from the limb of a tall oak near the house. Like other strange figures, she disappeared almost as soon as she was noticed. These sightings were unsettling, but they were only just the beginning. What followed were disturbances that were initially easy to dismiss, but ultimately impossible to ignore. Knocking echoed through the house after dark. Scratching and gnawing sounds seemed to come from inside the walls. Some nights, the family claimed that they heard what sounded like heavy chains dragging across the floor, even when no one was moving. These events didn't happen once or twice. They returned night after night. Eventually, the presence became physical. The family members reported being pinched, struck, or having their hair pulled by something they couldn't see. While several people were affected, the stories consistently report that John Bell and his youngest daughter, Betsy, suffered it the worst. Lucy Bell and John Jr. were left relatively unharmed by the witch. Lucy was proclaimed by the spirit to be the most perfect woman living, and the witch was shown a great deal of compassion towards her, even caring for her and singing to her while she was ill. John Jr. had long, intense conversations with the witch, but never failed to show any animosity towards it, declaring it to be the spirit of the damned. What made the situation even more disturbing was the force that didn't act randomly. It interacted and responded to questions that the family asked. When asked a question in a way that could be answered by numbers, for instance, how many people are present? How many horses are in the barn? How many miles to a certain place? The answers would come in raps, like a man knocking on the wall, a bureau, or like a bedpost. Or it would have so many scratches against the wall, like a nail or a claw. And they were always correct. In some early accounts, the spirit itself provides its origin, stating, "I am a spirit. I was once very happy, but I have been disturbed and made unhappy. I am a spirit of a person who was buried in the woods nearby, and the grave was disturbed. My bones disinterred and scattered, and one of my teeth was lost under this house. I'm here looking for that tooth. Of course, this cannot be verified. However, several Indian burial ground mounds are located in that region. In another event, the witch claimed to be a spirit from everywhere. Heaven, hell, the earth. I am in the air, the houses, any place at any time. I have been created over millions of years. It almost kind of feels like It. Like, I don't know if you watched Welcome to Derry yet.
Yeah.
I guess you could say spoiler alert. I don't know. But it kind of lives, like, on a different timeline than we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, it sounds kind of got, like, that kind of vibe. They also compare Mary Poppins to It. They say Mary Poppins and Pennywise are the same creature.
Okay. If you think about, like, if you break it down.
Mm-hmm. It's the same but different.
Yeah.
Anyway, these experiences weren't limited to the Bell family alone. Enslaved workers on the property reported frightening encounters of their own. One man, Dean, claimed that a large black dog would appear on the road whenever he traveled to visit his wife. The animal would walk ahead of him to the cabin door and then just vanish. Dean also claimed to be turned into a mule and attacked several times by the witch. He carried with him at all times his axe and a witch ball made by his wife as protection from the witch's influence. These encounters led some individuals to take protective measures as they believed they were being watched or followed. Neighbors who visited the Bell home sometimes left shaking. One well-known story describes a visitor who attempted to physically grasp the unseen presence, only to be overcome by unbearable weight and the foul odor that compelled him to release it. Incidents like these helped spread this story far and beyond the Bell farm.
So as the legend grew, the presence began to develop a personality, and eventually a name. For a long time, John Bell reportedly tried to keep the disturbances private, instructing his family not to speak about what was happening in the hopes that it would stop. When the situation became unbearable, he finally confided in a trusted friend, asking him to witness the events firsthand. After that visit, the entity began speaking openly and more frequently, repeating prayers word for word, mimicking voices with unsettling accuracy, and engaging directly with those who came to the Bell home to witness and challenge it.
Isn't it? I think it's wild that it could... it was repeating prayers word for word. Mm-hmm. It was mimicking other people's voices.
The mimicking, like, spot on freaks me out mm-hmm. so much with anything. Like, I feel like anytime we talk about something that can, like, just mimic is so crazy.
Yeah. There's a ton of people who, one very famous person who visited this, we'll touch on later. And then, there was one other person who was from, I think from, like, England or something.
Mm.
And the ghost, like, mimicked his parents. But apparently when it was mimicking his parents, it was mimicking his voice to his parents back home in England.
Wild. Yeah. Absolutely wild. This was when the spirit became known as Kate. In the lore, Kate was not a silent or passive figure. She expressed clear preferences, praised some individuals, and openly despised others, especially John Bell. No consistent reason was ever given for her hatred of him, but she allegedly declared that she would not leave until he was dead. What complicates the legend is that Kate was not always portrayed as purely evil. At times, she presented herself as deeply religious. She quoted scripture, debated theology, and participated audibly in prayer meetings. Some witnesses believed her prayers were more emotional and passionate than those of any human present. For a time, people even wondered if the spirit had been sent as a moral force. According to the stories, behavior in the community began to change. People became more cautious, fearing exposure to a presence that seemed to know everyone's secrets. Public wrongdoings reportedly declined. Fear of Kate's voice became kind of a social pressure. But this phase didn't last. Over time, Kate's behavior began to shift. The religious devotion gave way to cruelty. The voice that once prayed now mocked, cursed, and tormented. She became especially hostile towards Betsy Bell, interfering with her relationships and punishing her harshly.
Because that's what happens when best friends get significant others.
It was said that the witch harbored a particular disdain for Betsy's boyfriend. Family members feared leaving Betsy alone at night, and friends often stayed with her for protection.
I'm not wrong. I'm not right, but I'm not off. Not saying everybody does that either.
Right.
It's always portrayed that way.
So the witch was said to be everywhere, listening, watching, repeating private conversations, and stirring conflict between neighbors. She seemed to thrive on the chaos, humiliation, and fear. What began as a mysterious presence had become something far more dominating. As the years passed, John Bell's health declined. He reportedly suffered from strange episodes that left him unable to eat or speak properly, describing a sensation he could not explain, like his tongue just going stiff. As the abuse continued to impact his psyche, Bell took to his bed and was cared for by John Jr. On December 19th, 1820, John Bell failed to leave his bed, and John Jr. went to the cupboard to retrieve the medicine for his care. Instead of the three medicine vials, he found only one vial. It was one-third full of a dark, smoky liquid of unknown origin. The voice of the witch gloated, "It's useless for you to try to relieve old Jack. I've got him this time. He will never get up from that bed again." She claimed that she gave old Jack a big dose of it the last night while he was fast asleep, which fixed him. The contents of the vial were thrown into the fire, erupting into a blue blaze. John Bell died on December 20th, 1820, and the family believed that the spirit was responsible. I mean, how could you not? She basically just told you she was responsible.
Yeah, apparently there's, like, talk about that vial, too.
Yeah.
At one point, they took the vial and gave some of it to a... I've heard their cat, and I've heard a stray cat.
Either way.
And the cat, like, within minutes died. And then they threw the vial in the, like, a fire. And then the fire just was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And, like, erupted and then went, like, right back down.
Great.
Yeah. So there's some of the lore that go along with that little vial.
According to the legend, the entity even made itself known during his funeral, mocking the moment rather than falling silent. After his death, the disturbances gradually subsided and eventually ceased altogether. The legend later claimed to have attracted the attention of Andrew Jackson, who supposedly visited the property and left convinced that he had encountered something beyond explanation.
That was the famous person.
Dun, 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 dun.
President number 7.
Cats out of the bag. Whether that visit actually occurred as described remains debated, but its inclusion shows how deeply the story has become embedded in American folklore. It's essential to be clear about this. The Bell Witch story survives because it was told and retold, not because it was scientifically documented. Much of what we know comes from oral tradition, later written accounts, and family memory. There are hundreds of stories about the Bell Witch that evolve with each new generation. Details do vary depending on the storyteller, and some versions become more dramatic over time. Still, belief is real, and that belief has power. People traveled long distances to witness that what they believed was happening. Fear, faith, and folklore blended together in a way that felt undeniable to those living through it. Whether the Bell Witch was a supernatural force, a social phenomenon, or something else entirely, the legend took root in Adams, and it never truly left.
So, when we transition from the folklore to the history, the Bell Witch story doesn't disappear. Instead, it takes on a new shape. What remains are the real people, real places, and records that help us understand how the legend formed and why we endure it. The Bell family was real. John Bell moved from North Carolina to what is now Adams in the early 1800s and established a farm along the Red River. This was Frontier Tennessee, an isolated, rural, and deeply religious region. Families lived far apart, medical care was limited, and faith played a central role in how people explained suffering and misfortune. Census records and land deeds confirmed John Bell's existence, his property ownership, and his household, which included enslaved workers. These records anchor the story in reality. What they do not document is anything supernatural. Much of the Bell Witch legend revolves around John Bell's youngest daughter, Betsy Bell. Later, Family accounts describe her as enduring intense physical and emotional distress, according to these retellings. Betsy suffered fainting spells, choking sensations, exhaustion, and episodes that today might be described as seizures or hysterical fits. Friends and family reportedly stayed with her through the night, witnessing violent spasms, screams of pain, and visible marks said to be left by an unseen force. Whether these experiences were supernatural, psychological, or medical, it is impossible to say. But what is clear is that Betsy's suffering was taken seriously by those around her. The legend also claims the entity strongly opposed Betsy's relationship with her childhood sweetheart, Joshua Gardner, allegedly punishing her whenever the relationship progressed. Eventually, Betsy called off the engagement, later marrying her former school teacher, Richard Powell, and leaving Tennessee altogether.
Hate that.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the age difference. What was the age
difference? I don't want to know the age difference.
It was rough.
Although that's terrible. The entity, affected her that much. She's like, all right, well, guess I'm calling off this engagement.
Yeah. From a historical standpoint, Betsy's experiences matter not because they prove a haunting, but because they show how personal trauma became central to the legend's emotional power. Here's where historians slow down. There are no known contemporary diaries, letters, or official records written during the alleged haunting that provide a detailed description of the Bell Witch. The story entered print decades later. The earliest and most influential written account is An Authenticated History of the Famous Bell Witch by M.V. Ingram, published in 1894, nearly 70 years after the events occurred. This book is the foundation for nearly every modern retelling of the legend. Ingram claimed his primary source was an unpublished manuscript by John Bell's son, Richard Williams Bell, titled Our Family Trouble, The Story of the Bell Witch of Tennessee. According to Ingram, his manuscript represented the family's attempt to correct exaggerations and defend their reputation. However, this is crucial. The original manuscript has never been found. No independent copy exists. No archive holds it. Ingram claimed to have had the manuscript, but lost it. What a coincidence, what a convenience.
Right.
Which is the only explanation provided for its absence. Analysis suggests the text contained references such as detectives and modern spiritualism that were not in common usage during the time of the events, from 1817 to 1821. Indicating a later date of authorship. Modern scholars increasingly suspect that Ingram either heavily edited the text or may have written large portions himself. This does not mean the story was invented outright, but it does mean that our primary source is deeply problematic. Another famous claim is that Andrew Jackson visited the Bell Farm and fled in fear. While it's a compelling story, historians have found no letters, travel records, or third-party documentation to support it. Most scholars now view this episode as symbolic, or as evidence of the legend's widespread disenchantment, rather than a historical fact. In short, it's possible, but unproven.
Skeptics have long searched for natural explanations. One theory connects the legend to Kate Batts, a neighbor often portrayed in folklore as hostile, eccentric, or vengeful. According to rumor, she had a dispute with John Bell over an enslaved worker and vowed revenge. However, historical evidence weakens this claim. Records indicate that Kate Batts outlived John Bell by many years, contradicting stories that she cursed him on her deathbed. Modern historians generally agree that she was likely scapegoated after the fact. Her reputation shaped by later retellings rather than documented actions. Other explanations include undiagnosed neurological illness. John Bell's symptoms align with several known conditions. Poisoning, including arsenic exposure. Psychological stress and mass hysteria. Deliberate hoaxes, possibly by children in the household, sometimes called poltergeist faking syndrome. None of these theories can be proven, definitely, but all are grounded in known human behavior. Most scholars agree on a few core facts. The Bell family existed and lived where the legend claims. John Bell died in December 1820 after a rapid physical decline. The story was known locally before it was written down. Nearly all modern versions trace back to Ingram's 1994 book. What rumor remains unproven is the identity or existence of a supernatural entity, the witch answering questions, predicting events like the weather, or speaking in preachers' voices, Andrew Jackson's involvement, and the witch poisoning John Bell. The Bell Witch, historically speaking, is not a proven haunting, but a documented case of how fear, belief, illness, religion, and storytelling combined in early America. And sometimes, that combination is more unsettling than any ghost. One modern account comes from Ashley Hubbard, who documented her visit to the Bell Witch Cave in an article published on Wildhearted. Her experience is notable, not because of dramatic personal encounters, but because of how it blends local history, reported paranormal claims, and firsthand observation.
So that cave, the Bell Witch Cave, is on their land, and we could probably do an episode on the cave itself.
Yeah.
Because there's, from my understanding, like, tunnels, and there's so many places it tunnels to.
Right.
That is, like, unbelievable.
Could get its own thing in
itself. It could get its own episode.
So Hubbard visited the site as part of a guided tour, choosing a combined experience that included both the cabin and the cave. While waiting near a fire with the other visitors, she learned that the cave sits beneath a bluff believed to contain an ancient Native American burial site. According to information presented during the tour, archaeologists previously estimated the graves to be between 3,000 and 5,000 years old, based on burial positioning. Individuals were placed upright and facing east. These burials are commonly attributed to ancestors of the Chickasaw people. This detail plays a significant role in modern interpretations of the Bell Witch legend. Some people believe the cave may have served as an origin point of the entity, while others suggest it became associated with the spirit after the Bell family haunting. Hubbard raises a question often repeated in paranormal discussions: whether the burials were simply placed there by coincidence, or whether the location itself held spiritual significance long before the Bell family lived nearby. During the tour, Hubbard was told of a reported investigation from the 1990s in which a paranormal researcher placed night vision cameras throughout the cave. According to the account shared with visitors, the investigator captured a brief visual anomaly, something that appeared and disappeared in roughly 3/100ths of a second. The footage was reportedly shown to multiple experts, some of whom suggested it could resemble a vortex or a porthole. Terms often used in paranormal research should describe a possible doorway or anomaly rather than a physical object. It's important to note that Hubbard did not personally witness this footage, nor does she claim to verify the explanation, only that this was presented during the tour. Inside the cave, visitors are shown a stone box grave displayed in the first chamber. According to the tour narrative, the grave was originally found elsewhere along the river and relocated to the cave for educational purposes. An anthropologist from Bowling Green, Kentucky, reportedly identified the remains as belonging to a young Native girl who died sometime between 300 and 1500 years ago. While the remains were later stolen during a break-in, the stone container itself remains on display. Hubbard is careful to note that nothing overly supernatural happened to her personally during the visit. However, she documents a number of recurring reports shared by guides and other visitors over time. These include phones and cameras shutting off unexpectedly inside the cave, devices just locking up or repeatedly taking photos without user input. She also describes an incident during her tour in which multiple people observed dark moving shadows along the cave walls, shadows for which no immediate explanation was offered. Rather than presenting these events as proof, Hubbard frames them as unresolved experiences. She openly questions the origin of the Bell Witch legend itself, acknowledging the range of theories from a human source to a spiritual entity to something unknown entirely, and ultimately admits that there may be no clear answer. For her, the visit did not confirm the existence of the supernatural. Instead, it reinforced how uncertainty, history, and belief continued to overlap at the site.
Another modern account comes from a Reddit user known as the_law_sun, who shared his experiences on the R Paranormal thread. He states that he lived in Adam's family. He was in the Adam's family.
He is actually in the Adam's family.
He states that he lived in Adam's from roughly 2004 to 2008 during his teenage years, and describes a series of disturbing events that affected not just him, but his entire family. The activity, according to his account, began shortly after he unknowingly uncovered 4 shallow Native American graves while mowing his family's property with a tractor. Experts later told the family the burials were consistent with the victims of the Trail of Tears, noting their shallow depth, placement on a hillside, and stone markers, suggesting they were conducted quickly and under desperate circumstances. The Trail of Tears we didn't cover it, but we talked about it when we did Lake Lanier. Because it was when they relocated the groups that lived there, and they made them walk. It was like 100 miles or something like that. And, yeah, obviously, people died and stuff all across that.
Yeah.
Not long after this discovery, though, unexplained disturbances began inside the home. The family reportedly heard heavy knocking and pounding on the exterior of the brick walls of the house, sometimes accompanied by the sound of running footsteps. The sounds moved around the structure and occurred almost nightly. The witnesses described feeling a suffocating presence in his bedroom, a pressure centered on his chest, and a sense of whatever was happening had begun to focus specifically on him. One of the most intense incidences occurred when he let his dog outside at night. As he opened the door facing the Red River, he began hearing whispering sounds that resembled leaves scraping across the ground, despite the air being completely still. The sounds grew closer and louder, forming what he described as a rhythmic incantation-like pattern. His dog reacted violently, hair standing on end, snarling and frozen in fear. He reported becoming nauseous and smelling sulfur just before his dog lunged forward at something unseen. When he pulled the dog back inside and locked the door, violent pounding shook the frame for the rest of the night. He states that neither he nor his dog slept until sunrise. In another incident, the witness claims he encountered what he described as a humanoid void seated in a rocking chair inside his home. He says the shape absorbed light rather than reflected it, appearing as a silhouette with no features. When he screamed and fell backwards, the figure reportedly shot across the walls and exited through a bay window overlooking the river. His dog chased the movement, barking and clawing at the walls. The account also includes a shared sighting with his young cousin while fishing at night. The cousin pointed out a pale woman in white clothing, of course, it's always white clothing, across the river, bending to pick up some stones. The witness states that he had seen this figure before and that she would disappear whenever approached. After escorting his cousin away, he heard splashing sounds from the water where the figure had been standing. The witness also reports episodes of missing time near Bellwitch Cave, reoccurring night terrors involving chest pressure and paralysis, an incident near the Bell Witch marker where dense fog, sudden temperature drops, sulfur smells, heavy footsteps, and loud crackling sounds surrounded him and several friends in a harvested tobacco field. During their escape, he claims that he was struck forcefully in the back by a rock, leaving a large bruise. He concludes his account by stating that these experiences were traumatic and difficult to revisit, and that he remains uncertain of how to explain them, despite considering himself rational and skeptical by nature.
Another account comes not from a single location, but from a guided tour experience. The account was shared by a tour guide leading a haunted tavern tour with a small group of guests. While discussing local legends, she began telling stories about the Bell Witch, an expected part of the tour in Adams. As soon as the Bell Witch was mentioned, one man in the group reacted strongly. According to the guide, he went visibly pale and appeared deeply unsettled. She continued the tour, but made a mental note of his reaction, assuming he might be a local who had grown up with the stories. At the end of her narration, she gently asked him if he had heard of the Bell Witch legend before. Reluctantly, the man shared his story. He explained that he grew up in Adams and, like most local teenagers, was familiar with the Bell Witch legend. One night during high school, he and eight friends went camping near what they believed to be the Bell Farm. After drinking heavily, someone suggested that they go find the Bell Witch's grave. According to the man, they drove around town and eventually stopped at a cemetery. He admitted he wasn't certain whose grave it actually was, or even where they were, but one of the group claimed it was the Bell Witch's tombstone. What followed was an act he openly acknowledged as reckless and disrespectful. One friend urinated on the grave as a joke, which, let me tell you,
you are gutsy.
Asking for it, my friend. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially the Bell Witch.
Uh-huh.
You're...
Anything of that matter. Like, I'm not messing with in that sense, but doing...
No, yeah, you totally, like, respect everything, but, like...
Doing that.
Of all of them, of, like, known things that we know about...
Right.
The Bell Witch, you're gonna... Okay,
yeah, well. No. Well, the rest of the friend group decided to follow suit. They eventually returned to their campsite without incident, but the man said that the aftermath unfolded over the next few years. By the time their high school class should have graduated, 5 of the 9 friends were dead.
Wow.
3 died together in a car accident, 1 died from a rare blood disorder, another died in a sleep from an unknown cause. The man told the group that from that point on, he believed that their actions that night had cursed them. He ended his story by saying he lived with the belief that the Bell Witch would eventually come for him as well. According to the tour guide, when he finished speaking, the group stood in complete silence. She later reflected not on the story itself, but on the expression on the man's face. A look of fear and resignation that had stayed with her long after the tour had ended.
That would be terrifying to live every day.
Yeah, no, I'd be...
Because I'd be like, it's coming today, it's gonna come.
Right.
When's it coming? When's it getting here?
Yeah.
So the Bell Witch is often regarded as one of the most famous hauntings in American history. And its influence on the horror storytelling is undeniable. While the legend dates back to the early 19th century, its modern afterlife began when the story moved from oral tradition into print and film, and eventually mass media. One of the most influential modern interpretations came from The Bell Witch, An American Haunting by Brent Monahan, published in 1997. Monahan framed the book as a discovered manuscript narrative device, claiming the text had been found in an attic and was so disturbing that its readers couldn't sleep for days. The framing deliberately blurred the line between fiction and recovered history, echoing earlier claims made about the Bell family's documents. Sounds just like Paranormal Activity. The book was presented as an unedited account originally intended to be passed down through Richard Powell's family, further reinforcing the illusion of authenticity. While historians do not accept the manuscript as genuine, The presentation of the story provided incredibly influential. Most notably, filmmakers associated with the Blair Witch Project have acknowledged that the Bell Witch legend was one of several inspirations behind their approach to the found footage horror genre. The connection is thematic rather than direct. Rural isolation, unseen forces, discovered documents, and the idea that belief itself fuels terror. While the Blair Witch ultimately became far more famous than its Tennessee predecessor, the Bell Witch helped lay the groundwork for that style of storytelling.
Have you ever seen the Blair Witch Project?
I feel like I did when I was younger. I haven't seen it in a while.
You could rewatch it. It's wild.
Is it?
Yes.
Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Yeah, it's good. You should revisit it.
I shall revisit it.
Over the past two decades, the Bell Witch has appeared repeatedly in film and television, often with heavy dramatization. An American Haunting, starring Donald Sutherland and Sissy Spacek, is a fictionalized adaptation of Monahan's novel, Bell Witch Haunting, Bell Witch the Movie, The Bell Witch Project, and The Mark of the Bell Witch. These films often simplify the legend, focusing on a single evil entity and omitting historical ambiguity, social context, or skepticism in favor of conventional horror tropes. The Bell Witch has also appeared in documentary-style programming, including Cursed, The Bell Witch, which presents the legend through a paranormal investigation lens rather than a historical one. Beyond film and television, the legend has crossed into music. The Seattle-based doom metal band Bell Witch took its name directly from the haunting, reflecting how deeply the story has become embedded in the darker corners of modern culture. Nearly every modern version of the Bell Witch traces back directly or indirectly to an authenticated history of the famous Bell Witch by M.V. Ingram. Despite its problems as a historical source, Ingram's book shaped the core narrative used in later novels, films, and documentaries. Some other notable works include Our Family Trouble, The Story of the Bell Witch of Tennessee by Richard Williams Bell, The Bell Witch in Myth and Memory by Rick Gregory, and The Bell Witch Anthology by Nick Moretti, which includes stories from both Richard Bell and Ingram, making it sort of a Bell Witch one-stop shop for the legend. What keeps the Bell Witch alive after more than 200 years isn't just fear. It's flexibility. The story adapts easily to each generation's anxieties. It can be told as a ghost story, a cautionary tale, a religious warning, a psychological case study, or a found footage nightmare. Each retelling strips away complexity to fit its medium, but the core idea remains the same. Something unseen, intelligent, and personal. And perhaps that's why the Bell Witch never quite fades away.
When you strip the Bell Witch story down to its core, what you're left with is a thin line between history and folklore. We can confirm the people, the places, and the time, but everything else lives in memory, fear, and belief. Whether or not something supernatural ever haunted the Bell family, the reactions were real. People suffered, communities changed their behavior, the story spread because it felt true to those who lived with it. In that way, the Bell Witch may tell us less about ghosts and more about how humans explain the unexplainable. Stories like this survive not because they're proven, but because they're powerful. They adapt, they grow, and they follow us into new generations, long after the original witnesses have passed away. So the question isn't just whether the Bell Witch was real. It's this. If you had been there, hearing the voices, feeling the fear, feeling the slaps across the face and the hair pulling, or watching others swear it was happening, what would you have believed? And maybe that's the part that still lingers. This episode was written by Sam from Scare Me Sam. You can find her on Instagram and TikTok under the same handle, Scare Me Sam, and check out her podcast where she reviews horror, thrillers, and dark fantasy books along with brief reviews of movies and TV shows. As for me and Em, thanks for listening to the Ominous Archives. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to search for us and follow along on social media. We're on TikTok and Instagram. We also have an email if you feel free to email us at ominousarchives@gmail.com. On the social medias, we share more eerie history, folklore, and creepy content. And as for us, I think we're out of here. So stay haunted and stay weird. See ya.
See ya.
Hey, Sam, where are you going?